Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to another episode of Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today we're talking all about dogs in the city with trainer Robert Hausman, also known as Dog Boy. Robert trains out of New York City. Hey, Rob, thank you so much for coming to Roberta's today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm thrilled you're here. It's finally someone in the studio. I can't tell you. It's so good to have a body in here with me. Yay!
I'm very impressed you were able to get through that intro.
Well, thank you.
I would have been, can we start over?
Well, I'm a professional now, so, it all works out. So tell us a little bit how you got started training dogs. Like, what brought you into it?
I really wanted to work with animals, and I would say that it was part nervous breakdown, I suppose, where I started, I had a bit of like a... an anxiety episode, and I found that going to shelters and pet stores was really kind of mellowing me out.
Oh, cool.
And from there, I was just kind of looking, and I had like a couple of odd construction jobs and stuff here and there, and then my girlfriend at the time found an ad in the paper for dog trainers wanted, but it was for an invisible fence company.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. So I worked with them for a while, and then, essentially, that actually led me down. It was a blessing in disguise, because while I'm not crazy about those systems, I was looking for ways that I could do it without actually shocking dogs, which essentially you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to for the system, I suppose. I mean, I'm sure that's arguable, but it led me down the road, like when I was researching it, to find, positive reinforcement and, actual behavior. Animal behavior as a science field was
right.
Really, really interesting.
That's cool. And so how long have you been training now?
I've been incorporated since 05, and I've been doing it for about 4 years before that. So
congratulations.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Long time.
Yeah, it's hard work, But so that's one thing too, for anyone that's interested in looking for a dog trainer, you want someone who's got some time under their belt, okay? You don't,
I would agree.
Yeah.
Especially as someone with some time under his belt, I would agree.
Exactly.
14 years ago, I would be like, no, that's not true.
But, especially if you have dogs with issues, but we're going to talk about that today. So we're just going to keep going here. So you work and live in the city.
Yep.
I'm assuming you specialize in issues dealing with urban environments.
Well, I think that a lot of the issues I deal with are pretty common, but I think once they're in an urban environment, it becomes much more serious, where if you have separation anxiety dog in the suburbs or in the country, it's not necessarily going to get you kicked out of your co-op. If you have a dog who has dog aggression, but you have a yard, it's much different than having to walk through your lobby of your condo or something. So it does get pretty hairy in the city, and people have much more – there's an urgency and – people have had to rehome their dogs. People have lost their apartments, and so it gets a little bit more intense here, I would say.
So, what do you think are the most common challenges that you deal with?
Those would be some of them. I deal with just basic uneducated dog, or you get somebody who's either has an adult dog or has adopted adult dog with who has literally no information about how to be a dog, much less how to be a dog in an apartment or even in a home. Then you're dealing with just, jumping and barking and, food stealing and just general mayhem. I would definitely say on top of that would be separation issues, barking issues, noise issues, destructive issues, and aggression of all kinds. So, resource guarding aggression, fear aggression, which in my opinion, fear and aggression are close cousins.
Yeah, they really are.
So you get a lot of that, like with dog, when you get dog reactivity or leash reactivity, things like that. I would say those are the most common, because the big thing with dogs in urban environments is they're going to get more challenging stimulation on a walk to go pee than other dogs in the country do in a month in their yard.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
That's something I've never thought of. And I mean, you know, I've had a dog in the city. I've been here now for, oh my God, too many years. We're not even going to go there. But, you know, I had never, that's so true. It never crossed my mind before.
Yeah. And I find it's extra challenging, you know, also because if you're looking for information on how to stop a dog from pulling or stop a dog from being reactive or fear, you know, a dog who's so fearful of men or children that it kind of shuts down or whatever, and you start doing some of this research on your own, you're going to find, you know, some really good advice, but it's like, you know, create, you know, 17 feet between you and the dog in a field and a parking lot. You know, and unfortunately here, you might be doing a really good job with that. And then a dog walker turns the corner with six dogs.
Totally. Or,
you know, and it's just going to, you know, kind of thwart your training. But there are ways to do it. It's just, you know, a matter of taking like time and having, you know, you got to set yourself and your dog up for success.
Yeah.
And really, you know, kind of hunker down and make it work.
Well, I mean, one of the things, actually, here, how old should dogs be to when they start training?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I am an avid fan of, like, the dog comes into your house and you start, you got to be patient. You're going to expect that a puppy is going to have house training issues and chewing issues and, you know, you have to have, you know, live in reality.
Yeah.
But the dog should learn its name and learn to sit and stay and learn how to follow you on a leash and learn, you know, you can start it off really right. But more important than anything, and I think this is something that's really missed in general knowledge, is between 2 and I'll say 16.
Okay.
That's the high end of things. Between 2 and 16 weeks, the dog is going through a developmental stage called a critical phase. Basically means everything that the dog is exposed to during that time with positive results is going to stay pretty positive. And unfortunately, that's the time when people are like, well, he doesn't have all the shots, so he stays in the house. So the dog might be at the breeder with its, you know, mom and litter mates learning all this great, you know, cues and signals from, you know, how hard is too hard to bite? How are you eliciting play from one another? And getting all this great information, and we kind of pluck him out, put him in a crate in the kitchen. And then he doesn't go back outside till he has all the shots. Nature is very clever. And after the critical phase, a dog is going to start responding to things it's unaware of with caution. So then you're dealing with what your individual like. Is your puppy a bold puppy? Is your puppy a wallflower? You know, and you know, sometimes people have a shy dog that doesn't go outside and they don't realize it's even shy until they start walking it. And the dog's afraid of everything from rolling luggage to skateboards and cars and bikes.
Totally.
And they don't even know where to start. So during that critical phase is really when you want to, you know, get them used to, you know, people and dogs and situations like going to the vet, going to the groomer, having their paws handled, having their food removed, having their tail touched and their teeth brushed and everything. You have kind of this blank slate that you can really get in there. And that, so I usually say the sooner the better.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And then, like, it's so funny because, I mean, I grew up in Westchester, so I grew up in the suburbs. And the majority of people's pets out there weren't trained because everybody had a backyard, you know, exactly what you were saying. But do you think that, I guess what I'm trying to get to is that when you're training a dog, you're increasing communication. So therefore, do you believe that all dogs should work with trainers?
Oh, I mean, I'm a trainer, so I'm like, but
well,
of course.
I know, but you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think that it's a field, you know, I think that if you are... If you have an easy, when I say easy dog, I mean a dog who is not causing any big ticket item issues. But I think that you should, even if you're not working with a trainer, you should take time to train it and train it appropriately. I find that often, you know, even experienced dog people will sometimes, you know, just not because they're terrible people, but usually just because they're missing a certain chunk of information. They're waiting for the dog to make a mistake and then trying to punish the punish the dog for that mistake instead of teaching it what's expected instead.
Right.
So if you're walking a dog and the dog is pulling, your next move is to put a prong collar on the dog and hammer away at it for pulling, but you're not necessarily teaching it what else to do.
Right.
So teaching it how to walk with you, and, you know, people are, you know, shock, you know, using shock collars in the park to get the dog to come back, which I guess, you know, again, the association that that dog can then make by mistake toward other dogs or the park or things in general can become really dangerous.
Yeah.
But, you know, these, they, I mean, look, they work, you know, because all harsh punishment tends to work.
Yeah.
But then at what cost to your relationship with the dog, and is the dog able to, you know, abstractly attach that consequence to the behavior you're trying to change, or is it just generalizing it to, okay, don't get too close to that tree?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Or like, every time I come to the park, something horrible happens
right,
to me.
Right, yeah. So you're, a lot of it is a matter of like teaching the dog what, you know, starting young, teaching the dog that coming to you is where it's at. You know, if I'm teaching a dog to walk next to me, I'll tell people, you know, I've taught dogs to walk next to wheelchairs, and I've taught dogs to like walk next to walkers and strollers, mm-hmm. A unicycle in Park Slope once.
I probably know that person.
I haven't seen him recently, but I've seen him.
He's in Vegas,
and they're still doing it. I still see him in the park. They're doing a great job, but you have to teach them that that's the spot. That is where the party's at. That's where the action is. Yeah. There's no better place in the world for you to be than be right here, even though there's great scents over there and there's another dog over there who you really want to sniff their butt. And, you know, the park is so close, you want to try and yank me over to it. It takes time and patience, but teaching the dog that this is, you know, this is actually what works better for you, although it might seem counterintuitive to the dog at first.
Right.
It just takes a, but you got to get in there. If the dog is over aroused and overexcited and dragging you to and from, sometimes you got to start small. You know, where the dog can, you know, you got to set them up for success. You're pacing around in front of your house, you know, just teaching them that this is, you know, being next to me is the spot to be.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm like dog runs. You'll see all this kind of stuff in dog runs, and it's like dog runs are, you know, Six Flags.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like,
you're trying to teach the dog something new when it's like so overstimulated.
And there's, you know, 50 million dogs, everybody's running around, and it's like, sit, Fido. It's like,
right.
It's not going to happen.
Right, but it can.
If it does, I'm impressed.
It can, but you can't start there.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big thing with coming and call, for instance. I'll tell people that you have to find the middle school between the middle school and high school, I would say, between grammar school and the doctorate program.
That's a good point.
You know, people will be teaching the dog to come in the house for a piece of food.
Yeah.
And then they're screaming it from across, you know, a big field.
Totally.
And the dog just is out to lunch. He's not being defiant. He's not being
alpha.
He's just overstimulated and excited. And he hears you, but he also hears 8 million other things.
Yeah.
So you're kind of less important. And then, you know, unfortunately, the dog can learn really quick, too, that the better game is to ignore you and have you chase him around for an extra 15 minutes of party time in the park. And that kills the command.
I mean, and that's the common thing that you see in the parks in the morning.
Yeah, it's, exactly.
You know, just chase down, that sort of thing. Let me see. Actually, you know what? This is something that it makes me crazy. I know that socialization can be a really complicated issue, and I think one of the big problems of socialization, too, is fear, because I think a lot of people don't understand what fear aggression is, mm-hmm. What exactly it is. Like, you see a dog, you know, straining at the end of a leash, like, rah, 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 and it's the fact that that could be fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of, oh, my dog's really aggressive, and it's like, well, why is that? So I'd love to talk a little bit about fear aggression and what you think about it.
Sure. I mean, that's an easy place to, you know, compartmentalize it and just be like, aggression.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, too, it doesn't really... You know, if somebody's dealing with a dog who is fear aggressive, they oftentimes are not really interested in the finer nuances of what's happening. They just help me fix it.
Yeah.
When it comes to fear, you can see. I usually see it as fear and frustration kind of combined.
Mm-hmm.
Where the dog is, if you have a fight or flight response. And you're on a leash, because this is pretty common, and people might agree with me on this who are listening, is I get a lot of, he does great at the park.
Mm-hmm.
He's really social and sweet. He does great at daycare.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he's on the leash, he's flipping out.
Mm.
And often it's a little frustration. It's called barrier frustration.
Mm-hmm.
He can't, you know, he's stuck in one spot.
Yeah.
He can't get over and go through his ritual if he wants to sniff or do whatever else he can do with the dog. And oftentimes if a dog is kind of freaked out for whatever reason, we'll just call it stress. The dog is stressed out, and perhaps he's having a fight or flight response, but flight is not an option now.
Yeah.
He goes into a defensive posture, and that defensive posture works time after time after time.
Mm-hmm.
It makes that dog, the other dog's owner, move their dog away, or it makes you, you know, their owner move them away so they get that social distance that they want. And other times they really want to get over there and kind of go through their ritual.
Yeah.
And that frustration immediately just skyrockets into this like frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
And it mostly people just get freaked out by it and just they're like, I don't know what to do with it. Or often it's like, you know, he freaks out, but if he gets close enough, he usually just sniffs and says hi.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know, when you get into fear, if you're using, you know, punishment, for instance, and you're using a prong or a shock or something like that, you're often making the emotional association way worse. Instead of making it better, you can sometimes stop the behavior in its tracks if you're strong enough or your timing is really good. You can sometimes stop the behavior in its tracks, but it's not always doing what you think it's doing. You could actually be punishing a really valuable warning system. So the dog will get closer now to a dog or, God help you, a kid or a stranger or something with a dog. You're like, no, he's been doing so much better. Look, he's not even responding.
Because
he's afraid of the he's afraid of the repercussions of reacting, not necessarily changing how he feels. Until he gets freaked out enough to, you know, go over his bite threshold and bite somebody, which is, you know, the big bad thing you want to try and avoid. But I mean, I think if people really you have to really know what's causing the aggression, and sometimes it's just overzealous. The dog is just over aroused, over excited, and it has this go to move that has worked really well for it for the last 6 years.
Totally.
But, you know, an aggression thing is something that takes a long time to fix. I mean, any kind of leash aggression can take a real long time to fix, and you have to make sure that the dog learns that. You know, you have to put the dog in a position where it's experiencing the trigger, whatever the trigger is, you know, whether it's a dog or a kid or a bicycle or a skateboard, experiencing that trigger in a where it feels safer, it can stay calmer. That might mean you're starting at 50 feet away.
Wow.
But then having that equal a positive association, whether it's a reward or a toy or something else, like, you know, a treat or something like that, where the dog is seeing, okay, every time I see that kid, I do something that's incompatible, like look at my owner.
Right.
And I get rewards, you know, high value rewards, whether it's my tug toy or it's a piece of chicken or something that's kind of, you know, kind of get me out of that mindset. And then you slowly close the distance over the course of who knows how long, depending on your dog.
Like, what's the worst case that you've ever had? How long has it taken you?
Oh, boy, months, years.
Really?
I've worked with some that, you know, just don't get better. I mean, I've had a separation anxiety case where they've, I mean, they've been trying to rehome the dog forever. Their separation anxiety is so bad, the dog's broken its teeth on the doorknob.
Oh, my God.
They broke the... What if he moved this? I'm not sure if he moved the stove to break the gas line.
Oh my God!
Or if he just turned the gas on the stove, he broke a glass window. It was Yeah, and like, and they tried to crate him, and he broke his teeth on the crate.
Shit.
Yeah. So I mean, it's really
It's serious. It's not.
It could be a clusterfuck. Yeah. And you know, in that situation, like, there's only so much, and they have to work, you know, and they're, so they've been paying for daycare and trying to, like, avoid it like this, and, you know, there's not much, in that case, I feel like the starting point is so low, and they were already ready, you know, they were just, we've been really trying to help them find a home that's suitable for the dog,
that's
where it's
cool.
Like a, you know, a retiree or someplace where the dog can be outdoors or something.
Yeah, and
you know,
just be with someone all the time.
Still is going to have to work with a trainer someplace, like a real certified, you know, you know, trainer or behaviorist.
Wow. Well, we need to take a quick break for station identification. However, we're talking to Robert Hausman, also known as Dog Boy, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
You are listening to Rec Tech. This is Animal Instinct on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritageFoodsUSA.com or give us a call at 718
1-800-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hey, and we're back. This is Animal Instinct. I'm talking to Robert Hausman, who is known as Dog Boy all over New York. I want to talk about, usually people think the aggressive dogs are, you know, the German Shepherds, the Pit Bulls, the big dogs. I want to talk about the little teeny, teeny dogs. No training.
Yeah, well, you get people are like, well, they're trying to do a ban in my building of aggressive breeds. And I'm always like Lhasa Apses and Shih Tzus and Chihuahuas, or what? What do you mean? Aggressive breeds like Pit Bulls and Rottweilers. It's like, oh no, just you're talking about big breeds who are stronger than, you know, strong enough to hurt you is what you're talking about, not aggressive breed.
Yeah.
And even when it comes to like, you know, the yappy, you know, Shih Tzu, Chihuahua, or, you know, Maltese, you know, I think there's always it's a compound thing when you get into the yappy or aggressive little dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it always goes, people are always like, well, I don't think people train those dogs.
Yeah.
Which I agree with to a degree. Yeah. I think people are like, well, it's not really that, but he jumps, it's not that big a deal. He sleeps on my face at night, but who cares?
Yeah.
He growls at the mailman, but he's just, everybody laughs and thinks it's funny.
He pees all over the floor, but it's so little.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Right. So the dog is really, I always feel bad for those guys because they're not getting any structure.
Yeah.
They're not being treated like dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting to learn and experience the, you know, a rich and exciting environment as a vibrant, intelligent animal. They're being kind of just like, well, you're just the little dog. Nobody's really taking you that seriously.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Like, the dog is like, I am taking me really seriously. So it's a compound thing too. If you end up, you know, I don't know if I should speak on this because it's not really in my wheelhouse, but I always, you know, feel that in breeding of a dog that looks a very specific way,
mm-hmm.
you might miss some, you know, some temperament stuff.
That's a good point.
You know, so if you're like, well, he's bred to be 6 ounces.
Yeah.
You know, what had to happen genetically to that animal to become a 6 ounce dog?
That's a good point.
There's really no such thing as a six ounce dog, by the way.
Give it time.
But let's say he's going to be, we bred him. He's a teacup toy miniature, you know, oodle doodle.
Yeah.
You know? And in order to get to that specific, you know, look and hypoallergenic state or whatever, how was he being bred with really well dogs who have really great temperaments, or was he bred with, you know, with anxious dogs or shy dogs, you know, to get to a certain point? So you might end up with like a genetic mishmash, which I don't want to pigeonhole all little dogs like that. The same way I wouldn't want to pigeonhole all little dog owners as, you know, they're not training their dogs. But then on top of it, I think that where you end up with a dog who might also be a little intimidated because of its size by, mm-hmm. you know, where if you have a Doberman or a Golden Retriever and a bike messenger passes by, they're like, meh, he's a little bit bigger than me. But if you have a teacup Chihuahua, he's going to be like, my God, it's a monster. Here it comes. It's going to kill me. And then you have all these other factors in place. I mean, I think that the main thing is, again, you get into early socialization, early training, get that dog exposed to as many. If that Chihuahua thinks that, you know, coming to you in the park is the greatest thing, mm-hmm. and that playing with dogs, appropriate size dogs.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way. I hate it when I see little dogs in big, in, you know, the big dog park.
The poor things. They just get knocked around like a soccer
ball. It's potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you're looking for trouble. But
for the big dogs or for the little dogs?
Well, I mean, even if it's a well-socialized little dog with a well-socialized, you know, everybody's happy, everybody's got a head full of rainbows running around the dog park, the big dog can still get excited and pounce on
and
break something on the little dog. It can become really dangerous. I would say, early training. I worked with a dog named Mio, and Mio's owner lived in Williamsburg at the time. I don't know where she is now, but she was like, you know, I wanted a dog who was this size and this kind of dog. He topped out, I think, at 2.5 pounds as an adult. He was tiny. He was like, it was like training a parakeet. And he would come when called in the park, and
awesome.
He would whip around to heel and sit at her side, and he was walking on the leash and socializing like a champ, and he
awesome.
Was great around kids, and he was just, she put in the work, and she put in the time.
Nice.
She also put in the time in the research of breeder, too.
Smart.
I think people have to be really careful where they're getting their little purebred, or any purebred, or any dog from. You know, you got to find a reputable breeder who's not just kind of Shoving dogs in a room and making puppies.
Or I'm a puppy mill in Missouri, but I'm a breeder.
Right. I'm also certified as a breeder, so it's not... You can't come see my facility.
Totally.
I'll mail the dog to you. He's small enough to fit in an envelope.
I love that. Yeah. That's my favorite. Where'd you get him? At the airport? It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, mailed him to me.
Seems like a good idea. God. So, here's a question that people ask me all the time, and I'm not too sure about the answer on this. Mm-hmm. New York. Nobody's home. Nobody's ever home. I mean, we hire people to walk our dogs, take care of our cats, do all that kind of thing. So let's say you are a single dog household. Are you pro or con that more, do you think it's better to have two dogs if you're one of these people that works 60, 70 hours a day week or even 40?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that it depends on your dog, really.
Yeah.
I could get into a whole thing on... dogs being solitary scavengers and not really pack hunters, but I'm not going to put myself in that position. I think it depends on your dog. If you're, people will do that sometimes where they're like, oh, my neighbor said to get a cat.
Yeah.
Or I get another dog and now I have two dogs who bark all day. Or now I have a cat who hides under the bed from the barking dog.
Yeah.
And, I think you have to identify what's happening when you're gone. If the dog, you might think that. If you're anthropomorphizing human thoughts and emotions into an animal, and you say, well, I wouldn't want to necessarily be sitting at home all day by myself without the ability to go to the fridge and make myself a sandwich or watch TV do whatever, I think that you immediately think that your dog needs a friend or whatever. If your dog is experiencing some separation anxiety or some barking issues or destructive issues, you got to figure out what it is. Is the dog bored? Is the dog really having some sort of response, like some sort of psychological response to it? And you got to get to the bottom of that before you make that kind of decision. And I would make it after talking to a serious trainer. I wouldn't just be like, well, so-and-so at the dog park said it worked for him.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because it's a big commitment and it's a big issue. And if it doesn't work out, then you're in a position now where you have, maybe getting a second animal in your life for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Or
the first one teaches the second one all the bad habits.
Yeah.
And then you've got just two delinquents in your house.
Yeah,
instead of one.
I think it comes down to identifying what's going on first before you were to make a decision that. That would be the best answer I could give.
It's a great answer. Yeah. It really is. And, do you think, you've worked with, countless dogs. You've seen them day one. You've seen them after they've graduated and all that. Do you think that the dogs enjoy being trained?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, these are really smart. I mean, you see almost an immediate when the dog is like, you know what you can tell. I'm getting, I'm communicating with you. I've been talking to these people.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah, like a 3-year-old dog is like, I've been telling these guys for years, man. Thank you. It's just, they're smart and they have this. I mean, it's really, without getting off on crunchy granola rant. This is the only species who's really evolved in a cooperative way with us. Mm. When we became hunter gatherers, the wolves that had better flight distance that could hang around and eat off our garbage slowly evolved by mating with each other into a subspecies of wolf and became kind of like these scavengers of our waste. And that turned slowly into us looking at puppies and going, aw, puppy's so cute. We want to put that puppy in our house.
Yeah.
And that slowly turned into guard dogs and herding dogs. And you think about all the jobs that dogs had before we just got them to, walk around with us and hang out with us.
Totally.
Like they were working for us. They were thinking and problem solving all day long and kind of jiving with us and riffing with us, which is amazing. When you see a dog who's, I worked with a dog today on drop it. All right. And I taught him, I would throw my glove on the floor and he'd pick it up and I'd show him a treat and I'd say, drop it. And he'd spit it out and I'd give him the treat. And I did this over and over again until I could just say, drop it. And he would drop it and anticipating the treat.
Yeah.
And then we randomized it, whatever. And then he was, I was talking to the owner and he went over and he went in into another room and came out with a sock and dropped it at my feet.
Awesome.
and she was like, yeah, see, now he's going to grab other. And I said, no. We're having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like this is a dialogue.
Yeah.
Where I don't see that as bad. If you really got into the behavior nerd land, it might be well, that's bad behavior because you didn't give him the cue. Where I see it as we were rapping with each other, man. We were in the pocket together.
Yeah.
So I think that dogs really enjoy it. They thrive on it. And also teaching it, and think about how stressful it would be for us if like, let's say you invited me in here and you didn't really tell me, you know, where the microphone was, where to put that, where your head, yeah. the headphones, I needed the headphones, or any, and you just yelled at me for making mistakes.
Exactly. And it's like, rah, 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 rah,
right.
rah. It's,
and then I'd be on it. I'd finally get it all together. I'd be like, you know, it would be a terrible interview. I'd be really nervous and uncomfortable. You know, so it's the same. You know, the dogs, unfortunately, they're just like, it's dinner time. That means I should, you know, see what's on the counter.
Yeah.
Beg the youngest member of the family yep. for food until they put some on, in my mouth. And then as soon as mom's back is turned, I'm just going to jump up and grab that steak off
totally.
Her plate. Because that's what dinner time is about.
Yeah.
And we just have conflicting ideas about what things should be like. You're like, well, when we walk together, you should walk with me like you're Lassie.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dog is like, no, when you walk with me, you should run behind me as fast as you can to the dog park.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have to get on the same page. And the only way you're going to do that is with patience and training. And it could take, you know, I usually say, look, if you have a dog, whether you're getting a puppy or you're adopting a dog, the first year of your life with that animal mm-hmm. is teaching them
everything.
How we, this is, there's no more human environment than a city.
Yeah.
You know, if we're in Brooklyn, we're in New York City, there's no place that is more human than this.
It's true.
It is our duty to teach this animal how to live here. And when we do it really sloppily by expecting them to just kind of come out like they're Rin Tin Tin
yep.
and then yell and smack, shock, whatever else
mm-hmm.
to show him that that's not where you pee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dog's like, well, where do I pee?
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
you know, I get that. I get it. Okay, so you don't. And often dogs will just be like, okay, so you don't want me to pee in front of you? Is that what this
yeah,
is about?
Yeah,
and then you
yeah,
have a dog
yeah.
who's hiding behind the couch to take a dump
yeah.
because he thinks that you're just not really into feces.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, he's just, you're outside in the rain for a half an hour going, come on, go poopy, buddy, go poopy. And he's like, let's go in so I can poop when you're
behind
in the shower.
Totally.
Because otherwise you freak out. You know, you have to just remember that they're not using that abstract thought and language
yeah.
dialogue and everything else that we kind of take for granted.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, you know, even people that have had dogs their entire life, it's like, it's nice to even just get, like, a couple sessions in with a trainer just so that you and the dog learn the language together.
Right.
I think that really helps
a lot. As a trainer, I couldn't agree more.
No, I'm serious. I mean, I've had dogs forever, and the last dog I had was a Jack Russell, and I mean, I've trained dogs for years. No, couldn't get through to him. I mean,
right.
he was like this juvenile delinquent that was smoking cigarettes and a jean jacket in the back, you know, and it was like,
you're not my real mom.
Totally. I mean, totally. It was like the puberty phase was so evil with this dog. And I finally was like desperate, and I was working with horse trainers at the time, and I found a dog trainer two sessions later. It was like, you could see Turbo be like, oh,
thank goodness.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a great name, Turbo.
He was a great, great dog. Yeah. He was a nut job, but he was a good, good dog. And once, and I was working with horses, so like I was translating, my language was more equine.
Mm-hmm.
So like he actually learned dressage by standing in the ring and watching dressage lessons. He could do all kinds of really complicated things.
Cool.
So that was cool. But it was really all about just him and I getting the correct dialogue and canine dialogue,
sure.
not horse dialogue.
Sure.
You know,
and
so,
human dialogue.
Yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I always think it's an amazing thing. I find it really touches, you know, it really means something to me that you're communicating with another animal,
yeah.
I think is just a gift. And like to take it for granted, I'm just always like, what are you doing?
It's you amazing.
Know?
You
and
know?
When you, and you know, back to the punishment thing too, like if you think about something like, you know, like if you ever see somebody do like a freestyle dancing with a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you see a dog who's, you know, can walk on its hind feet and climb stairs and like open the mailbox, or a dog who's doing even if you're doing agility
yeah.
and like going through hoops and jumping through this, and you know, you can't teach a dog by doing that by threatening it.
No.
You know, and then you got to take that same philosophy and be like, well, hey, if I can get the dog to do a handstand, you know, with
seriously.
Positive reinforcement, then why would I try to get him to stop pulling me by, you know, slapping him in the nose? Or
yeah.
You know, you got to kind of think outside the box a little bit with it. And look, what's really motivating a behavior?
Yeah.
You know?
And it's the same for us. I mean, you know, it's kind of like Catholic school. Like, if you're going to get beat up every time you do something,
yeah.
you know, you might stop, but you also might rebel.
Well, I always say with my daughter is if she's on, you know, she flies beautifully, she comes to restaurants with us, she's a champ. She's
oh,
the best.
Yeah, good job.
She's a champ.
Good job.
She's a champ. She's great. And nobody's ever come up to us afterwards and been like, she's such a submissive child. You must be such dominant parents. You know, they're always, you know, it's you, but also we bring Play-Doh and we bring coloring books. Yeah. And, I mean, smart restaurants will also have coloring books and stuff there for a kid, you know, just to set them up for success.
Totally.
I want you to sit still for a little while. Here's something that you like to do when you sit still.
Yeah. Which is a lot nicer than if you move, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
You
know? And it also like, totally doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Then you get that, and it's like, all right, no dinner for you. Right. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I hate to say it, Rob, we're out of time, but I want you back. Like, I want to talk to you about all kinds of groovy stuff.
Let's do
I do want to get all your info out there. So how can our listeners find you?
If you go to www.dogboynyc.com is my site. All my contact stuff is on there. And it's Dogboy Inc. on Facebook, and I believe, or Dogboy Inc. on Twitter, and Dogboy NYC, I believe, on Facebook.
And do you work just strictly in NYC, or do you go out from here?
You know, it depends on the season. If it's if it's slower season, like midsummer, dead of winter, sometimes I'll go over to Hoboken or you know out to you know parts of Nassau County, maybe.
Cool.
But you know, typically I'm mostly Manhattan, Brooklyn, strictly.
So, I mean, if you're in the area and you want to find Robert, please do. He's a great guy, and he's a great, great trainer. I've known him for a long time. I'm thrilled that you came on today.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Thank you. I had a blast.
This is really cool setup, too.
I love this place. This is fun. And if you guys have never been to Roberta's, please come and eat the food because it's freaking amazing and the pizza's out of this world. So I am the food healer, also known as Celia Kutcher. Thank you so much for listening this week. You can find Animal Instinct on Facebook. You can find Food Healer on Twitter, also at foodhealer.com. I will be back next week with a new episode. We're going to talk about guinea pigs. So have a great week and take care.
The theme song for Animal Instinct is Never Coming Home by The Ron Chans.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.